Welcome back to NELP's Young Professional Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for demanding landscape professionals. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your host today is me, Brett Lemke with RM Landscape, and we have a guest, Phil Sexton. How are you, Phil?
Brett, I am doing well as can be expected. You know the chaos going on behind the scenes today, but it's all fun.
Good. So I'll read his bio, but Phil is a good friend, a coach of mine, helps our business, and we've worked together through SUNY Cobo Skills advisory boards, and just through some industry pieces, and the snow industry and the landscape industry. So thrilled to have him on. It may get a little bit of a banter here because we know each other so well, and we can just poke. So we'll see how much we get into that part. But officially, Phil Sexton is the founder and managing director of WIT Advisors, an industry advisor to the Snow and Ice Management Association. WIT Advisors administers the Sustainable Winter Management Swim System and certifications. Phil is also a professor at the State University of New York Cobo Skill. He holds degrees in agriculture, horticulture, and business economics from the State University of New York, and a master's degree in sustainability from Harvard University, where he focuses studies on corporate innovation and sustainability and research in salt use by the winter management industry. So there's a lot there. We've got to probably get the audience caught up, Phil, on some of this cool stuff. I've heard the story. I'll go on mute and I might take a nap, but you'll explain to everybody. But it's really good pieces, and all that's, I think, you know, my perspective is you brought a lot of the outside world into our industries and brought some really great intelligence and that education background into this. So we're going to touch into all that. We can just focus on snow. Usually we have some other hosts and they want to talk. They don't like snow or they're not in the big snow market. But here we have nothing else to talk about snow. And I think for our listeners, I think that's all we should talk about today.
I agree. It's November.
That's it. If some of you haven't seen it, and you probably have seen it, and it's just around the corner. And so, you know, Phil tells me all the time, Brett, you're a little behind in this. You got to hurry up. So I'm looking forward to him telling you, our listeners, the same thing. So, cool. Phil, a background piece. You're from the industry, and so you built yourself into this in this advisor category. But just walk us through how you found yourself creating WIT Advisors.
Yeah, I mean the back of the backstory is, you know, I have been working as a contractor for over 30 years. Right before I moved to the Mid-Atlantic, I lived in the Washington, D.C., Maryland metro area for a number of years. I dabbled in several different things, trying to find my way, worked in agriculture through most of my teens, actually, milking cows, the whole thing. So I grew up in a farming community, even though I didn't work on I wasn't raised on a farm, but I more or less worked on all the neighboring farms for friends and those kinds of things. And then dabbled in my own landscape business for really just a short period of time, I'd say. And then I decided to go back to school. So I've gone back to school several times in my career, mainly because I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up, like a lot of us. And I landed in an agriculture, horticulture degree at one of the SUNY schools, as we talk about, State University of New York. And then I was very quickly recruited by Rupert Landscape, which a lot of folks have heard of in our industry, obviously. And so I was really fortunate to cut my teeth there. And then through that experience was, when Rupert actually sold their business, I ran a tree company for a couple of years. It was a former subcontractor relationship I had and ended up going there, and the whole time was being courted by Brickman. And so a lot of my career actually was spent at Brickman as well. I ended up becoming one of the managing partners there, and started really what is today BrightView's sort of Northeast division. So that's sort of what brought me then to WIT Advisors. When I left that business, I actually left it without a plan. So I just like many of us that sort of made a change during that transition period when things were merging in that company. Several companies had reached out to me to see if I'd be interested in working for their organization. At the time, I really wasn't interested in relocating again. And so I had a lot of requests to consult, right? And we do call ourselves advisors. So I do try to differentiate us from, you know, sort of the typical consulting lane of the business. But we're advisors, we're coaches, as you said. I've really enjoyed, you know, being your coach and in a lot of ways being coached by you over the years, Brett. And so the whole purpose, though, was, gosh, I had this opportunity to sort of step back from the business for a minute and say, what could I do to help this business, you know, further professionalize and really be more sustainable? Because in a lot of ways, I started looking at our industry as, you know, we're these green professionals, we're these stewards of the environment, or at least perceived so. But I also felt like there's a lot of things they were doing that are quite a bit screwed up. And when you think about it in terms of, you know, from an economic perspective, we tend to still be the industry that's competing with each other to the point where we're all racing to the bottom from a pricing standpoint. And then when you think about the sort of copious amounts of fertilizers and pesticides, you know, the synthetic kind in particular. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll land on this topic a few times in this podcast, but salt use in the winter management industry is really a bit of an invisible pollution epidemic that most people still don't seem to know about. And so I just wanted to do something that dealt with all that. And so that's how I started it. And then it really evolved into, you know, becoming business advisors for obviously companies like yours and many others. And so I think the one thing that's probably missing from that bio at this point to talk about is you're a part of this, Brett, you and your company, but we also have what we call the WIT or the WIT Collaborative, which is a co-op of companies that are very much like-minded in wanting to do things in a more responsible and sustainable way. So that's really where, you know, that's evolved over the last 10 years, the more I think about it now.
Yeah, and you know, and I think I've thought back a few times of just sort of how we've connected and the evolution of it. And, you know, and to many of our listeners, you know, coaching is a huge opportunity. We've talked about this on this podcast, is it's finding, be it mentors, be it coaches, consultants, advisors, but outside perspective can really help your business. And what has started as, you know, I think through our relationship was, can you solve some operational pieces or, you know, help me think through this strategy, has evolved to some philosophies of how we operate our business, philosophies, how we protect the environment and through the work that we do, and how can we be more creative. And I've watched this company change, or even myself change, just because of education, you know, with you and your team, because of just, again, you know, those conversations late at night or those conversations with our team. And I've appreciated that it's not, you know, I think for our listeners, when you find a coach or even a consultant, when you find that the person's starting to use the name, like, we should be doing this versus you should be. And you've done that, and a few others have helped us this way. You know, you have a good partnership, and then it can go both ways. And so it does capture that, you know, your strategy. And I think a number of people in the industry are out there working to help really be a part of a business and help it grow, rather than, you know, pontificate or share their wisdom or do this and follow these five steps and, you know, I'll see you later. So you've really, and shoot, we've been working together for 20 plus years now, I think, easily.
Yeah. And in one way or another, yeah, that's probably right. Yeah.
So, you know, and any one day, right, we talk about a variety of things between operations, strategy, you know, the team, the client, the assets of our world is often a way that you'll reference pieces for us, those most important things. And so sometimes it's really hard to just focus on one or a piece to it. But I thought today, you know, let's understand some of that and the framing of our winter services, and I thought it would be, you know, running the gamut of you know, where people are right now. And I'll use, you know, I'm probably, I think, a fair example of what people are dealing with right now in the winter season in November. How do we get, what are we doing? What should we focus on? And I thought we'd just sort of start at the top and work our way down to some of these pieces like sales. And I thought I'd run a scenario through you. It's, you know, we are still experiencing, many probably people are in the market, is, you know, these late season sales requests. How are we dealing with those? What are we, how do you, when people think it should say yes and really no? And I'm finding that there's this incredible demand for late season sales right now, because either people are changing or something's happening. It's a lot different this year than it has been in the past. And so what advice have you thought through when it comes to, someone gets a call and they say, I'd like to, you know, I'd like you to quote this at snow, and it could be snow next week, right? For all in the Northeast, at least. But what's your perspective and strategy for those late season requests?
Right. Well, I think a couple different ways to look at it. And yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that, because yeah, we've definitely had these conversations. But I think, you know, at the risk of commoditizing the service, but I think we have to think about it in terms of inventory, because then it makes it a lot easier for us as an industry and for us as service providers to think about when we just have no choice but to say no, or we know that, you know what, this one's worth the risk taking on late season, because I know I can handle it, right? And so thinking about it in terms of people, materials, equipment, like the team, the clients, the assets, but thinking about it in terms of, you know, the workforce, what's our workforce availability as far as operators, as far as people on the ground shoveling, those kinds of things. And what's our ability to store material, purchase material, those types of things late season, particularly if it's a bigger, juicy job, right? Like, those are usually the jobs that are hard to turn away, even though we know there's a fairly decent risk that we're not going to be able to pull it off legitimately, right? And so I just see us do that a lot. And so sometimes we have to know the numbers that concretely. And I think that's where we try to kid ourselves sometimes. At least that's been my experience. Both, I've done it, I've certainly done it in the past, because again, I think that's where we, as a very entrepreneurial industry and as small business owners, it's all about risk reward, right? But I think we always tend to be a bit more risky than maybe we are calculated in measuring that risk. And so when you think about what's happening now in this current economic climate, there's a couple different things going on. One is, I think from a pricing standpoint, and I think why we're seeing some of this late season movement from the client's end, is because a lot of us, and I know including you, Brett, have poked out price increases that clients have never seen before, but it's also because we've not really seen inflation like this in a very long time. So I'm seeing price increases anywhere from a minimum 10% to 30, 40% compared to what they were having to pay last year. And a lot of that's driven by fuel and everything else. But I think the other thing that we've got to be quite a bit more serious about is, you know, you and I, we've talked for years about the idea, you know, I coached the idea of thinking two seasons ahead, thinking 6 months ahead. And I've actually been rethinking that, in that I'm not sure that's forward thinking enough anymore, particularly when you think about supply chain. So if I needed some fairly decent, you know, large equipment to handle a big snow site, for example, and it's, you know, today's what, November 3rd, I'm kidding myself if I'm going to get it, or at least I'm going to get it at an affordable rate, right? So we have to even be really careful about how we estimate this work, even if we think we can pull it off. And then not only is the supply chain an issue, but then going back to the workforce, Do I legitimately even have somebody to put in the seat of that vehicle or that piece of equipment? Because we've got, you know, you can call it the Great Resignation, you can call it quick hire, quick fire, whatever the term is this week, but it's going on consistently. So I think we're seeing a lot of turnover, you know, in those operator positions as well, because they're in high demand, right? So there are people out there that are offering them more than they've probably ever been offered in their career, right? So we've got to sort of take all that in consideration too.
Yeah, and it's that right client. You know, I think we're experiencing a little bit this year. There's just one or two clients that you just can't say no to, and some opportunities came up. And then there's other folks that are just, it's out there. It could be a good job, but you're better off saying, you know, not right now. And it's hard. And I'm a sales driven person, and there's ops driven people that would say, no, unless I have that piece of equipment and that salt or that material and that person in my hands right now, I'm not taking it on. You know, it's finding balance in that path. And then working with clients, we have a couple that are saying, we know it's late. What could you help us with? And like, well, I need time to get this, and this prepared. How can we help each other through some of these parts? And there's going to be few opportunities like that if you find the right client and person to be working with that. But it's happening. You know, even when you think about the renewal rates, I mean, we still have people that haven't renewed yet, and we could have a harder line. We're choosing not to. With some clients, we're just trying to walk them through it and keep in touch. When we're preparing that they will. But that's sort of coming to an end, you know, in these next week here, because contracts are started and where are they with pieces? And so as long as you're talking with these folks, the renewals or these new business, you know, there's opportunity to think through a plan. But if they're just soliciting or not saying anything to you in the renewal process, then you got to start making these smart decisions really quick here, especially in the New England or the northern climate, where, you know, we've plowed it on November 3rd many of times in our careers.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I remember a November 7th storm for you, and it was either last year or 2 years ago, right? And so, you know, today it's going to be in the 60s, which is odd for upstate New York this time of year. Not typical anyway. So it's more likely there could be snow than, you know, being out in a t-shirt. But I think the other thing, too, that's interesting, the more I think about your original questioning was, there has been like this dramatic swing of the pendulum. And I'd say on a positive side, early on in the spring, early summer, I was also experiencing and hearing about more renewals happening earlier than I'd ever had as well. And I think there's potentially reasons for that, particularly on the client side that are worried about inflation. And so they were actually more willing to sign up early to lock in the price, let's call it, right? Especially if they're working with a good provider. And I think that opportunity is could very quickly be a missed opportunity for us as the service providers, because I've all too often experienced or observed where we're afraid to go after the renewal when I think is the most appropriate time. The most appropriate time to go after the renewal is right at the end of the snow season. And I think we and our customers for years have set this precedent that no, we don't worry about that right now. We do that closer to when it's going to snow. But that's ultimately what screws us up every year, right? As far as capacity planning and those kinds of things. And so I would just want to continue to advocate, rather than even make it a renewal process, you've heard me talk about this before, Brett, but let's make the renewal actually part of the end of the season review process, so that as long as, hey, how was the service this year? What could be better? What could we be doing better to be better prepared for next season to service you better? What are any of the sort of punch list items? Is there any, you know, property repair damage or anything else that we have to deal with? And so long as we can check all those other boxes off, then it's appropriate to ask the client, so is there any reason why we wouldn't just renew this now? So that we're not sort of under the gun like we normally are later in the year. So it's beneficial both for them and for us. And I always hear us as the contractor saying like, yeah, I like that idea. But then we're also the excuse. We're like, yeah, but what if something happens with pricing? What if salt goes up 10%? You know, that's always the risk that we run here. But I think the bigger risk is what you're dealing with right now is we still have contracts out there that are not renewed and we could have been plowing already. So I think that's a bigger risk than just securing the business.
Well, and, you know, and I look back, it's like we have about 50% usually is up for renewal year over year for us. And so, you know, here we are saying that, man, we need that price increase to cover that. But 50% of our portfolio often will not, or it's already predetermined price increases, or it's already locked in and thought of in previous years, seasons. And so there is contribution. Certainly every dollar can count. But it isn't as dramatic as one would think. And if you are in a seasonal model or multi-year using that kind of piece, there's a lot of this is not as volatile if year over year piece. So, I think through some of those and says it should prevent us from pushing that effort. I mean, we're not, you know, as much as you've shared that with me, we have still not been able to convince ourselves to get that out as soon or understand the steps to taking that. And not all of our clients follow that regimen and go, they do RFPs and all that, but there are many that do. And those are the ones that we should be very much talking to and saying, this shouldn't be you trust us, we're in a good spot, we had a good season. What's going to stop us from just continuing that and getting this off our plates right now? And that 50% of renewal probably can get down to 25% renewal by the time the fall comes around.
Right. Well, I think great point too. I mean, on the trust, like I think these latest season renewals, just to kind of put a bow around this, is I believe it's a relationship issue and a trust issue. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've heard other contractors talk about in the past, I just think we've got to get away from this is, well, you know, I like to run it up to the end of the clock, because then, you know, isn't that a good strategy where my client really doesn't have a choice? They're going to have to probably renew with me. Like, no, I don't think that's true. Maybe it used to be, but I don't think that's true anymore. Our clients are very savvy to this, right? And if anything, they're the ones that are leveraging it, thinking you can't afford to lose the work. And so you can give me whatever price increase you have all day long. But if I delay it long enough and it looks like you're willing to just wait long enough, then I'm the client now. I'm the one that's going to dictate what the price is. Yeah. And that's usually what happens, right? And so we as an industry, I say this a lot too, but we've got to get some courage here around this and just start to learn to say no. But do it in a way that's calculated, in that you have to know when that capacity for that job, that in a lot of times we're waiting for renewals last minute that already perform at sort of a substandard level, particularly at a profitability level. So we're all, but usually we're willing to sacrifice through it because it's a big job. So we're always looking at the top line revenue, probably more so than what we should be looking at, which is the bottom line. You know, but the way that I'm able to look at it a little bit more objectively now, because I don't necessarily have as much of a horse in the race in selling the work, is, yeah, but what's the opportunity cost that we gave up if we could have just taken that same, you know, two loaders and a skid steer and five people and whatever else is tied to that? How much better could we have done with those resources if we didn't have it tied up over in this job over here that we're letting them sort of drag us along? Right. So it's opportunity cost, I believe, is something that we not often enough look at. So we're always fearful of losing the job rather than sort of think about, yeah, but what work could I take on if I was to finally sort of let this go, because, you know, they do this to us every year or whatever the frustration is, right?
It's a bit of a leap, certainly when you get on there, and we've sort of said goodbye to some clients that just aren't matching up anymore, and we're immediately in a sigh of relief that we're, you know, because we've reallocated the resources to some new opportunities, and that's, you know, helped us through that part. And so It's happening too late for us still. Admittedly, we're making decisions even today that we should have made months ago. But I agree, we're in a much stronger position when we have time and we know, and you know the numbers, you know where you're going to be and how to really put those resources in the right places. And then when you do make that commitment, you still have time to go out and find new business and generate new opportunities rather than, well, if they say goodbye or I say goodbye to them, no big deal, I'll move it over to this site. But you've lost the opportunity if growth was is a focus to build off of that. And so it's you know, in our market, it is hard to change people's mindsets, but it shouldn't, you know, what I continue to say in my head is it shouldn't change how I at least try. They may not listen, and you know, they may sit on our quotes for snow for month, you know, months, but at least we're getting them out there much sooner and having the right conversation. There's a lot of work out there. You just got to find the right people to do it with.
Amen to that. And I think, you know, you spoke to earlier to, you know, what we define, you know, the primary thing that we coach on is prioritizing the most important things as team, clients, and assets in that order. So team being number one or people being number one. And I think, you know, excuse me, sticking to the snow topic, if we had to attribute one thing concretely that, you know, why people get burned out in our industry or why they leave our industry, just through a lot of conversation, I think we could agree snow's potentially the number one reason, right? Because it's, we're this landscape industry that then sort of flips our whole world upside down to do this snow thing that, generally, I think we need to admit, generally, most of the people on our teams do not like doing it. They would rather not do it if they had a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, does that sound familiar, Brett?
Yeah, too familiar.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that we can do as contractors to buffer that or to sort of differentiate from other companies in the industry? And I think, you know, the number one way to do that is reduce the burnout. But you have to identify what causes the burnout. And I think some of the burnout starts with this renewal process. Again, we're always up against the clock. Like, this is always an up against the clock part of the business from a storm response, you know, perspective. But even at this renewal rate perspective, like, why are we still waiting to hear from clients when it is the snow season? I mean, we are in the snow season. To your point, we have plowed snow on November 3rd, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Probably in a 10-year period of time, we probably do it half the time or close to that. And we all too forget that. And so, but that pressure right there from a sales perspective immediately then gets, you know, by the time we close that deal. So let's say you close two more deals at the end of this week. So on November 5th, you close the deal. And then next week, there's snow in the forecast. What is that doing to our teams? It causes absolute chaos, right? And then our teams are sort of looking back to us as either the leadership or the sales team saying, like, why did you agree to do this so late? Like, we're not ready. We don't have what we need. We don't have the people. They're not hired. We don't have the equipment. The rental houses don't have them available either right now. And so we're always stretching our resources. And then, you know, lo and behold, I think what a lot of companies, if they really wanted to take a deep dive look at it, is usually the clients that are causing us most of that pain. So it's like that Pareto principle of, you know, what's the 20% of the clients that are causing you 80% of your headaches? It's usually these same ones that are late to renew. And they're usually the ones that are burning us out. And they're usually the ones where we make the least amount of profit. And so what are we doing? why do we continue to subject ourselves to that? So I just think it requires, you know, I think that's why I enjoy what I do with you and others, Brett, is it's probably easier for me to look at it from an outside perspective and say, like, do you know this is what's happening to you? Because a lot of times, you know, internally, when we're just trying to manage the business and the, you know, the 152 moving parts in the business that we have to manage every day, it's hard to see that that we're allowing this to happen to ourselves sometimes. So I think it's just an interesting perspective, at least from my view. And I think it's something that can be solved as long as we're willing to admit to it.
And the timing is right for that conversation. If anything, it's imperative as we go into a business climate that may not be as easy to work with as it's been in the past. And so we're very conscious of the work and the clients that we're taking on. Is it going to be the right piece? And can we be effective in that spot? And so and I think everybody's thinking that through, be it even our clients. And so we're, you know, that relationship will be tested. And if we've got to have the right parts going into, you know, whatever's ahead of us. And so we watched this season, we hit our sales budget, but there was months where it was like, I don't know how, and it changed my mind how we're going to get there, changed my mind pretty quickly of, well, what are we going to do about that? But it is to have confidence in your planning process and the people you're working with and you'll get there and making those tough decisions. And so as you think about these operations, you know, as Phil referenced that team, the client assets, and putting those as a priority and talking through those and the strong organization of it. It's imperative that, we work through those. And, you know, Phil, you've helped the strategies of, you know, those post-op, post-event autopsies and pre-planning and just sort of the cycle of how to keep talking about these and not let the seasons go by where we're not trying to continuously improve, even if Mother Nature's throwing a lot or a little at us. It's constantly working through those opportunities available. All right, so we've not solved it, but we've put in our listeners' brains when someone calls today and says, "Hey, can you?" What they should do. Hopefully, they'll find the right path on that. And at this point, you know, we don't have enough time in this podcast to talk about how do you have to be when you have to start thinking about assets and materials and all those parts, how to be planning that 6, 1 year, 2 years in advance. And the strategies are just endless of how to be prepared. But it is to reflect on that this end of the season and come off, because we talk often about the 12-month business. And it's been something I got to think many, and you probably know this better, but many people that do snow don't plan, even if it's a small part or a large part of the business, they're not using 12 months to think about this part of the business.
Right. And I think, you know, I think that's where that the 12-month clock starts, or the 12-month calendar starts at the end of the current snow season, right? So some, depending on where you are geographically, your next snow season starts somewhere between mid-March, say like if you're in the mid-Atlantic, to mid-April, if you're more in the Northeast or Great Lakes regions, Midwest, that kind of thing. So not terribly different, but just think about it that way. And I think, you know, that's a very different mind shift, if you will, from what I think most of the industry typically thinks of it as the start of the next snow season is sometime after Labor Day. Right. And I think we've gotten, at least I think we've evolved a bit to say, well, maybe it's after 4th of July. And I think we think about the sales season being then, but to me, if you think about July 5th, so then you got August, September, October 5th is 90 days. I'm really supposed to be pretty much near the end of my preparation process operationally to be ready for, I mean, you know, Brett, you have some contracts that technically start October 15, right?
Right.
We were just talking about one last night. And so I think when you think about that, then you work backwards from that to July 5th. It's like, that's still not, that's like the latest you'd want to start, right? To give yourself 90 days, because think about what you're trying to fit in 90 days. It's not just snow. You're still trying to fit in the day-to-day rest of the business, we call the whirlwind, right? Yeah. And but to be able to calendarize it to say, okay, so renewal season really should start right at that end of the snow season. And then new sales season, being sensitive having been a landscape contractor for most of my career, I know that it's hard to just, you know, not just turn it off completely and go into the landscape season, especially spring off. So it's like, okay, so let's give ourselves a little bit of a break. But after spring operations are done, which that's, you know, one of the other major bottlenecks, obviously, in the industry, we should be at least on the calendar back to, all right, if we are going to grow the sale, the snow business from a revenue, top line revenue standpoint, we need to start at this date. So that should be sometime as soon after Memorial Day as possible. Right. So that, so I'm generally just saying you got to start at least 30 days earlier than I think the earliest we ever think about starting. Right. If you're really going to be in control of this. And I think that's, again, going back to your original statement about the renewal constraint, is we're not an industry that's generally been comfortable in taking control of that process. We're still allowing the clients to tell us when they're willing to start talking about it. And I just don't think that's no longer sustainable, in my opinion, without there being some consequence, right? We're the professionals. We need to be more insistent on, in a polite way, obviously, in an educational way, but letting the client know, like, this is the time when we have to start planning this, if you want us to do a good job for you. Mm-hmm. You know, and usually those that are looking for a contractor, that's usually because there's some sort of pain, and usually the pain is rooted back all the way to how prepared or unprepared that contractor is. So, you know, if you really think about the snow business, like what is the client really purchasing from us? Because I think and they think it's the plowing and the ice management. And, you know, I continue to advocate that's about 25% of the service. Most of the service is just like a fire department, though. It's a level of preparedness, right? So you've heard me say this many times, fire departments, you know, come in all different shapes and sizes. You have in the way they're funded. Some are just very much a volunteer. You hope somebody shows up. And so that costs $1 amount, or you could have all the way up to the, you know, double shift, you know, folks playing cards, waiting to slide down the pole, ready to go at a moment's notice. But the fire department's success is never based on the number of fires that they have, right? It's based on their level of preparedness and how they respond. And so that's what we have to be more insistent on. That's what we're selling. Some people like to call it insurance, you know, maybe that's part of it. But I think for the most part, though, it's, hey, if you, the client, are okay with, you know, a lesser level of service or lesser level of response, then yeah, we can afford to wait until, you know, last minute to renew, or we can afford to do it at a cheaper cost, whatever it is. But again, we have to be confident in what that level of service is and what that level of preparedness is really required to meet that level of service. That's what we're selling.
And if you think, you know, as contractors, what we're talking about, right? The sales cycle of it, you make the sale and high fives around, you finally got where you need to be, but that's an instant in terms of the time that takes to get ready. And then, yeah, the easy part is, you know, or the, you know, the relief is you're actually plowing, but all the effort to get to that point where that snow event came through. And then as soon as that event's done, the amount of work behind that, there's no such thing as a snow event that lasts 24 hours. They're really like those 48, 72 hour kind of events, readiness and post-op piece. And there is where the effort goes and is pushed through. So it's a fair point and one that we've been working on sharing with our team, and we started using all of October, you know, to train and you know, we've had people looking at us cross-eyed a little bit just because they're new to our industry or our company, saying, well, what are you training so early for? There's no snow. Don't we need to see it to and touch it to actually train for it? And it's just, and we're continually trying to promote that's not what we can't wait any longer. And be it with getting the clients thinking the right way, getting your team ready. You know, ultimately, hopefully you find somebody in your company that can help champion this. Is someone that does have a passion for snow, helps us go a long way. So if everybody puts their head in the sand on snow, or just doesn't really like understands it's a necessary evil in their business, then yeah, you're always going to be reacting rather than a proactive piece. And there's both out there. Absolutely.
Well, that's where I've been proud to be a part of, even seeing some of that mind shift, you know, even in your business over the years, Brett, because we as an industry all too often, because we're entrepreneurs and risk takers, we all too often sell the snow job in particular in sort of a mindset of sell the job and then we'll figure out how to get it done. Right. I mean, we even caught ourselves absolutely thinking that way on some jobs over the years. Right. And so, but that again is part of the problem. And to your point, when we sell the job and there's this sort of immediate euphoria of, woo, we sold the job. And then right after that, it's the, oh shit, how are we going to get it done? Right. And so we have to check our guts when we're in the sales process, because if that's how we feel, like, how are you going to feel if you actually sell this job? Right. If you're confident, like, we got it, no doubt, then great, then go for it. But if it's a, I'm not really sure how we're going to pull it off, but let me see if I can sell it first, call a timeout on yourself for a minute. And so, I don't know how many people listen to this, but that'd be the one thing that I'd ask everybody to think about this winter season, or even if they're still in the sales process, think about that. Let your gut tell you what might be the right answer. And then I think the other thing to think about during the snow season is going back to that Pareto principle, but try to pay attention to, you know, be mindful of who are the 20% that really are giving you 80% of your headaches. Cause we need to do something about that. Cause if you know that they're a headache, then imagine what they're doing to your team, and they're probably burning them out, calling them too often, being unreasonable as far as what the level of service should be, or there's a misunderstanding on what was contracted, or all these things that our teams, our people are having to deal with on the front lines. And, you know, let's pay attention to that and do a better job of assessing. So what do we need to do here to fix that relationship? Is it a price thing? Is it an expectation thing? Is it, you know, sometimes we just need to say goodbye. So let's think about that more intentionally this winter.
It's an inevitable conversation. It's just acting through those, right? So, you know, if you're an owner operator and you're in a truck or a plow and you've got plenty of time to think, or if you're, you know, you're running or leading a part of the branch or an operation, it's going to go through your head. It's just taking that out and putting it on a piece of paper and saying, act on this, or reflect, you know, put this into motion, and business will improve. I've only seen this team, my team, rally around the new work, and they saw work that was not good for us go away, and they've seen new work come on that they're excited about because they're bigger opportunities, and it'll take a little time, but we will be creating a snow operation here that will be much more exciting for us and the team. And we've got minds that think sales, we've got minds that think ops, so I think we're aligning better with that, with those balances. Well, a lot of life lessons here today, Phil, as always. You're a philosophical, strategic person, and you put a lot of thoughts in my head, hopefully the listeners too. We should do a post-season snow review, right? And say, how'd everybody do? And then I'll tell you how fun it was this past snow season. So what do you predict? Are you predicting a heavy snow season or light? And we'll hold you to it.
Oh, good question. Things I've read say, I'll call it normal, but I think we forget what normal is, because I think weather is changing. Obviously it's changing, and it's interesting, even in your market. So you're in Rochester, New York, I'm in Albany, New York, and, you know, back in the 90s, I spent most of my snow time, you know, in Maryland, where we're always dealing with rain turning to freezing rain, turning to snow, mixed bag precipitation, all that. And always enjoyed upstate New York winters where, you know, it just snowed. Right. And so we are now experiencing that same weather pattern that, we did, back in the Mid-Atlantic. And, you know, everything seems to be pointing this year to, you know, more snow, but a little bit warmer snow. So that just actually makes it a little bit more challenging. Because I remember even, you've heard me say this part too before, is 2 feet of snow when you do get it every once in a while, say in Maryland, versus 2 feet of snow in Rochester. The 2 feet of snow in Maryland actually is more like 4 feet of snow because of all of the moisture and that precipitation. So it's that much more challenging versus we're normally used to that drier weather pattern, which that does seem like that's changing even for us. I think as time goes on, and it certainly seems like all the future forecasting that you see going on right now is telling us that we're going to have more of those types of snows this year. So as you said, though, we'll see it when we see it.
it's there, you know, if you're in a New England market, it's going to snow, right? Or we have to be prepared that it will. And that where normal is that, you know, those averages and those 3 to 5 year averages, how do you prepare for that? Because if you just react to last year, it was light, or last year it was heavy, you're always going to be in for a shock. So how do you get prepared for as normal as possible and bite down? It's an extremely difficult business, and hard to compare it to the green side. And but strategies don't work in both ways, but being prepared is generally the value of both sides of every part of this business. So, well, we made it to the end, Phil. Congrats. And so we end everything with a rose and thorn. So what is your rose this week around these times? And what's been your thorn lately?
Oh, my rose? Gosh. I think my rose is normally always my kids, right? It's like all of this, at the end of the day, how bad is life really when you sort of look at the people around you that are sort of either relying on you or inspired by you or whatever it might be. Right. So I think that first and foremost would be that, I'm not sure what to tell you a thorn is other than, probably like many of us just, seem to run out of time, right? Every day. So how do we fix that? So there's always the unknowns that, you know, sometimes they're opportunities and sometimes they're like, really, did I really have to deal with this today? So I'll keep it that broad.
Right. Rose for me, we've got a great fall season happening here, and we're, you know, from a work standpoint, we're getting ready. We're wrapping up a green season up in Rochester, and talking to a lot of clients and hearing and listening to opportunities to work better. So getting in touch with people at these kind of seasonal transitions has been good and exciting to hear where we can do better, and exciting to hear that where we've done well for folks. So I'm thrilled about that. And I'll go back to an easy one from a thorn standpoint. It continues to be, you know, staffing, and especially as we ramp up into this winter time, where do we find folks that are interested and willing to try out the snow season as a career or even just the job for the season? So it's a that part. I could hear the anxiety within the team of, like, where is the staff going to come from? And so we continue to fight that. That's not anything new, I don't think, but it is, it's there. And, you know, and it's interesting, you know, over the last year or two, probably we've all heard our clients are aware of it and are dealing with themselves. So it's better to be working this together. So, great. Phil, thank you for joining me, and sharing and keeping this snow only. I think we'll have to talk grant landscape again, or design, build, and maintenance. But right now, I appreciate this is all about the snow.
You got it, buddy. And, because I've known you so well for so long, I feel comfortable to say, you know, for those that maybe don't know you as well, Brett, I mean, you've been a great advocate and leader for the industry. You're forward thinking, and I appreciate, you know, having folks like you on our team and part of our family. So thanks for everything you're doing for the industry.
I appreciate that, my friend. And we, to our listeners, thank you for taking the time with us today. Please share, subscribe, send a review, all those good things that come along with the world and the business of podcasting. I don't think we've ever called ourselves officially professional, but we've done a lot of these, and we're doing a lot of these because you, the listeners, are out there, and then get to chat with some fun with friends and make new friends through our guests. So be well, everybody. Have a great week. Thanks again. Take care.